Hello there, and welcome to the Tech Means Business podcast. This is a series of podcasts that concerns itself with those places where the worlds of business and technology come together. Now, it's been an odd few months. Some might even say it's been a very odd couple of years, and we've been talking a lot about the changing nature of work and the changing model in which we all work in, whether that's hybrid, working or in or out of the office, working remotely. And with that change in model, comes various consequences in terms of IT and technology in general. There are issues around collaboration and technology, business continuity, security, support, data centres, and really once you get into the detail, things get very much more complicated. So today I'm delighted to be joined by Brett Wilson from Interactive to help me unpick, if you like, some of these different strands that have got really rather tangled up in the last couple of years.
Brett's job title is Chief Operating Officer, Infrastructure and Risk
at Interactive, an Australian company. And I guess really, traditionally, Brett, welcome to the show. And first question, give us a little bit of potted history about yourself and how you ended up at Interactive.
Okay, thanks, Joe. 20 years this year, in March of 2021. I started with the business in a frontline sales role, selling hardware maintenance. People often ask me how I've stayed with the same company for so long, but it has grown quickly and it has changed plenty to be interesting over the years. I took a long time moving out of a sales role, which I really enjoyed, into sales management, and I did that in 2015. I did 3 years as a sales manager before I became the director of the business continuity and data center business. Today, and most recently, I've been appointed Chief Operating Officer of Infrastructure and Risk at Interactive.
Now, Brett, I know that it's well-trodden ground for many people, but you're at the front line, really. What's your experience at the moment? Do you think companies are looking for their staff to return to central offices or call centers, for instance, or are they still operating in this hybrid model?
Whether remote workforces may have been hype really depends on who you ask. Even within our own company, there's some divergent views on this topic. My own view, yeah, there's a strong desire to bring staff back into central offices for work and collaboration. As a senior person in this business, it's natural that others are going to take their cue from my work style and that of my colleagues and peers. So I think if we're going to see more staff returning to the office in the future, it's going to be led from the top. Lately, I've been mulling over this concept of the office having hive-like properties. There's core and central jobs that are best done in close proximity and working with others. There's, of course, other jobs that can be done remotely and satisfactorily so. From my own perspective, managing a few different lines of business and a couple of head office functions, I just find it really useful to have face-to-face interactions with people who are key to me in the business. To me, there's really no substitute for in-person meeting room sessions with a business partner from finance or the CFO. Similarly, a face-to-face planning session with marketing, or lunch breaks with new starters. It's just no other way to share those stories and those narratives of business. It's just really hard to replicate remotely. I think by way of example, it's useful to pause and reflect on everyone's own journey throughout their career and where their relationships lie. For me, the relationships, the people that I've influenced and the people who have influenced my career over the years, have all been in close proximity, based out of the Sydney office and working closely, and very hard to replicate that. By no means, and no one wants to be a 100% in the office zealot, like a lot of execs, just keen to strike that right balance. I've had one of my serviced office clients said to me recently just how refreshing it is that staff don't have to sneak out of the office to go to their child's soccer practice in the afternoon anymore. And I just think that flexibility and acknowledgement that the work getting done is much more important than where it gets done and what time it gets done and how it gets done. Deadlines, of course, but really as to whether it's done during the middle of the day or after the kids go to bed is neither here nor there to corporates. I read a recent article from Google and they were talking about the topic of team normals. So just trading off that added flexibility of a team norm that exists. I think in our team, a team norm is the 9 a.m. Monday morning kickoff meeting. And we know that Queensland colleagues are going to be out of bed at 8 a.m. for 5 months of the year with daylight savings. And that's just an accepted team norm in our business. But having the added flexibility that's come into the world, particularly on the other side of COVID, has really sort of softened that such that we have a bit more flexibility and everyone's really appreciating that. The corporate world is heading down a path of more flexibility in remote working, and COVID just accelerated that a lot.
Flexibility does seem to be the key point here, doesn't it? So let's say in the last 6 months at Interactive, are you seeing people maybe adopting 3, 4, or 5 smaller facilities, or maybe keeping that central office, or are they being mixed up, you know, people working from home or maybe going to a smaller branch office? What's going on?
Hybrid work is here to stay. People have been really and have become really attached to the shorter commutes, and these smaller offices in more locations, they're giving a lot more access to diverse recruiting opportunities and just the general flexibility. I was speaking with one of our large international banking clients last week, and the feedback there was they'd always run with a single Sydney office, and there was definitely the need for a suburban second office for them. Whether you call it second or third, neither here nor there. A lot of people are calling work from home to be the second office. So in that context, it's possibly a third office. But having an office in a location closer to home, reducing the commute, and with a lot of different properties to what is probably built in existing offices today, so possibly less open plan and more features. So one common feature that we get a lot of feedback on is a plaza-type feature in the managed office. If you think about plazas, you've got access to food, you've got tables and breakout areas and park benches and the like. In the modern workplace, that plaza, similar sort of features, it's typically attached to the kitchen area of the business. It's got booths. It's got an area where people are going to come to. We're moving off having kitchenettes on the floor where people stay in their neighborhood, make their cup of tea and go back to their desk. And it's about increasing those collisions that happen and that spontaneity that can happen through collaboration and staff moving to similar shared spaces. Alleyways is another topic that we've been playing around with in our own business and our own facilities lately. Yes, meeting rooms have always been important, but when you come out of that meeting room, it's that hallway and that ability to have touchdown tables and chairs such that you can sit down. If you've been wound up in your meeting room, you can finish off a meeting, pull down and assign tasks and wind up that conversation and just have access to those touchdown spaces when those collisions inevitably happen. And one of my own bugbears in open plan office. One other interesting topic I find is libraries. So in my own work situation, as a knowledge worker, as someone who does a lot of concentration work, it's a very challenging environment sometimes to be in a noisy open plan office. And that really did democratize the workplace. But there are times when you're working on a thought task that requires that peace and quiet. So having areas designated within the facilities, library style scenarios, not so much about the books, but about the library rules of a quiet environment for people to do that thought task and that concentration work is really an important concept. And for companies looking at serviced office providers like Interactive, look, surrendering CBD office space in place of suburban capacity, that business case just writes itself. The savings are there as it's associated with the overall occupancy costs. So in summary, I think the new workplace is a mix of the CBD office, it's second or suburban offices like Interactive and others, and maybe 20 to 40% of staff working from home in an ongoing way.
That idea of business continuity used to mean running a spare office, if you like. And one has images, really, of empty rooms with rows of unused computer terminals on the desks, all gathering dust, maybe a generation or two old, you know, spare stuff that's been kicking around. But now, of course, that's all got to be different if your overall business model in terms of use of office is hybrid in some way or other. So if that's changed, what does modern business continuity look like?
Modern business continuity, it's much more about being integrated with the daily operations of the company. There's no two ways about it. For those who can work from home, they are working from home. They're set up. They've been down to the local audiovisual to pick up new monitors, keyboards and mouse, and they've set up a home office where they have the ability to do that. And they're either working from home in either a full-time or at least a percentage of the time. If they're working from home a day a week, honestly, this is the best possible testing that any business continuity manager could ever hope for. In the past, older facilities, business continuity would be tested, if it was lucky, on an annual basis. Good customers did that every year. Not all customers did that. But now, with this integrated approach and work-from-home capabilities, these capabilities are being tested on a weekly basis every time someone works from home. I think in FY22, as we come into that in July of this year, a major trend in business continuity will be a much broader focus on not just business continuity, but operational resilience. So operational resilience, in its simplest form, it's pretty simple. It's about businesses anticipating risks and planning to recover from them. Broader than just business continuity, as it previously was, operational risk speaks to crisis management, governance, and vendor supplier assurance. It's also about physical safety and security of a company's people and premises. I could reasonably expect to see some significant updates to many of APRA's standards this year. So APRA is Australia's regulatory body. We'll be working this year with many of our banking, insurance and superannuation customers on those specific topics. In terms of crisis management, it's one aspect of the business that we particularly enjoy working with customers, and they'll typically engage external agencies and make use of bad actor scenarios having an impact on their business. These scenarios typically involve stress testing executives and their preparedness with the use of scripted role plays. Common scenarios that we see and have seen as exercises in the past include extortion, right through to some complex cyber attacks and ransoms. I think you'll have seen it, Joe, even only last month, an American oil pipeline suffered a ransomware cyber attack that impacted the computerized equipment managing that pipeline. And even more recently, the world's largest meat company by sales experienced a similar attack. So both companies in each case were reported to have paid millions of dollars in ransom to unlock their systems. With pandemic remaining at the top of business continuity managers' risk register in the coming year, I can really see these crisis management exercises and people-based scenarios playing out in our facilities.
At the moment, Brett, there's a great deal in the press about the Australian government's push through legislation to protect infrastructure and make sure that businesses keep running. Aside from that kind of legislative arm twisting that's going on, how are you persuading companies? What's your elevator pitch, if you like, to persuade companies that business continuity is a really good investment to make?
Oh, good one. Look, I was discussing this very topic earlier today, and as it relates to a previous customer that had a disaster declaration with us and made use of our facilities for quite an extended period of time. In that case, the customer made use of our business continuity seating, and it really proved to be an essential component of their business recovery efforts, solving for a particularly sophisticated cybersecurity event. Historically, we had always thought of business continuity seating as back up for a physical event. So things like typically a power outage, a network outage, fire, flood, and maybe number five was a cybersecurity event. Somewhere down at about number 23 pre-March last year was pandemic. What we experienced with a cyber event in this particular case, the customer really benefited from a completely physically separate network, clean IT equipment, and by clean, I mean uncontaminated from the virus that was affecting their business and the ransomware attack that they were experiencing, and the ability to continue their business from our business during that period of interruption while they built their IT systems into a new environment. People often think that a lot of their problems are solved through soft phones these days and plugging into their laptop. The phone systems in this case were particularly useful to that customer because all of their phones were soft phone by its nature is attached to your laptop, and all of this customer's end user devices were impacted by the malware. So under those circumstances, a business continuity facility, which is a very physical thing, proved a very effective solution for what was effectively a digital disaster.
In the long term, Brett, what effects do you see happening on companies and organisations and the ways in which they might want to behave going forward?
I can absolutely see that businesses will adopt decentralised offices for a start. I can see that they will continue on with a CBD office because in the same way that I want to collaborate with my peers in the office, I want to have access to my CFO, I want to have access to head of marketing, I want to have access to the head of people and culture. In the nature of performing my duties in my role, businesses want the same. And they get that by being in central business districts. So I don't see that those businesses won't be in CBD locations in the future. I just think that they will additionally complement that with suburban and fringe locations that are closer to where people live. Beyond that capability, there are certain roles, probably about 40%, that don't need to be done in the CBD location. And I think those are the roles that will be done work from home. And there'll be a lot of people very, very happy to have those roles and work in that way. But Australians are a little bit unique in that we actually statistically do enjoy coming to the office a little bit more than our international counterparts. And we've seen that through some data recently that about 57% of Australians want to return to the workplace, probably a higher number than other countries are reporting around the world.
My last question, finally, Brett, without getting in the way of non-disclosure agreements or letting cats out of bags generally, what are we going to see next from Interactive? What about those blue sky projects that you're working on at the moment, perhaps that you can let us know about?
Look, you might have picked up on a bit of a theme through this podcast, Joe. Interactive are really making inroads into cybersecurity and helping customers on that journey. We've got our own CSOC, our Cybersecurity Operations Centre in Australia. We have our CISO, Chief Information Security Officer, and we're working with customers, particularly around the Microsoft Sentinel products, native to all the operating systems that have been installed, and working to provide a managed service. And we've had a tremendous take up on that. It's really important that customers make use of the SIEM capabilities. Everyone is aware and has access to the security information event management capabilities of Sentinel, but not everyone's able to determine what's important to them and what could have an impact on their business. Interactive are acting as cloud shepherds in a way, helping customers on their journey from infrastructure onto public cloud and building it with security native to those environments.
And as the band strikes up there in the background, that's my cue to say to you, thank you ever so much for listening. My thanks, obviously, as well, especially go to Brett Wilson, the Chief Operating Officer for Infrastructure
and Risk at Interactive.
Thanks again, guys, for listening. And I hope you can join me next time on the next episode of Tech Means Business. Bye for now.